Retreats have been a part of my life for over 40 years. I have taken a habit of taking 8-day silent prayer retreats, usually at a spiritual center. You have a director that you meet with once a day, but the rest of the day you are in silence and you devote yourself to periods, usually 4 separate periods, hours of prayer. In every single call agreement that I signed, in every church that I served, and in my work at the national office, and then in judicatory work, I asked to have included the opportunity to take an 8-day silent prayer retreat each year. And you know, I didn't find a single church that ever said to me, "We don't think it's a good idea for our pastor to go off and pray for a week." And in fact, I found that it filled the well. And I brought back so much energy and experience of God's presence when I would go on these retreats, and it was reflected in the life of those church communities. Well, we're coming on 15 years in our marriage, Nancy and I, and before we got married, I had just completed my cross-country bike trip that I've told you about in the past from San Diego to St. Augustine, Florida. And she knew that bikes were somehow going to be a part of this relationship. So she wanted to go on a bike ride when she had a sabbatical experience. And she also had heard about my experience on retreats, and she wanted to do a retreat as well. Now, she hadn't been on a bike since she was 13, so that was an interesting challenge for her. And she did famously and completed about 350 miles in the Adirondack Mountains around Lake Placid. So, you know, look at this one. She's all there. And then she decided to go on an 8-day silent prayer retreat. Courting happens in different ways in different couples, let me tell you. But she decided that she wanted to do that. Now, as an impartial observer, I would like to suggest that being in silence for 8 days was probably harder than riding a bicycle through the mountains for her. But it was a wonderful experience for us both. And it gave us a good round foundation of shared experience that we have carried in our married life together. I think times of retreat are times to get our bearings, to go deeper, to find purpose, and to strengthen our faith. And so as we go into this Lenten journey, we have the opportunity to start with Jesus' prayer retreat. He goes off for 40 days in the desert. And a very important thing happens in that period of time away. Specifically, he sets the ground rules for his own ministry and mission in that time away. And it comes out of that interesting passage about the temptations that came to Jesus. But he made it very clear, as we read it in Luke, that Jesus was not here to grab power, nor to show how much he matters to God, nor to work any magic for the masses. That wasn't what he was about. And he set those ground rules at the beginning. He did his pre-work, and he launched his ministry. My friend Kate Huey writes about this as she ponders the temptations that Jesus offered. Kate was the dean of the Amistad Chapel at our national offices. She says, "After all, why shouldn't Jesus satisfy his hunger with a little bread? And wouldn't it be great if Jesus, instead of the hated Romans, ruled the world? And how impressive would it be if Jesus flung himself off the temple roof and 1,000 angels came to rescue him? We can almost hear the tempter voice saying, "That would be awesome." But that wasn't how it was going to be. So, where does this struggle come from? More than one writer even suggests that the tests come from deep within inside Jesus himself. Inside Jesus himself. Hungry and alone and wondering. N.T. Wright suggests that the devil's voice appears as a string of natural ideas in his own head. They are plausible, attractive, and make, as we would say, a lot of sense. Thus, Wright says, it is a very personal and intimate struggle for Jesus, who we remember was fully human as well as fully divine. So he sorted out his next steps in the desert. Well, there were no shortcuts for Jesus. He took that 40 days in the desert, and then as he launched his ministry. And there's none for us either. There's no shortcuts for us as a community. We simply can't go from Mardi Gras to Easter without going through Lent. You can't jump right over it. You gotta go through it. Our journey, like Jesus, is 40 days, except that we add the Sundays as a part of Lent, because there are always reminders of the resurrection every day in Lent. And so it comes that we get together to celebrate the resurrection every Sunday. Like workouts or climbing mountains or biking them, the difficulties make us stronger. 67 days on a bike will do that to you. When I took my journey from San Diego to Florida, I wound up buff. I mean buff. I remember when we got into Florida, where you might think of it as totally flat. There are still hills in Florida. And I was in town with my trailer on the back of my bike with the 65 pounds of gear that I was hauling and pedaling in. And I had finally gone far enough and long enough that my legs actually had some muscles in them. And so I was just tearing up this little bit of a hill. And all of a sudden, there was a car that was next to me, and the window was down, and there were a couple of kids in the back seat, and they said, "Wow, Daddy, did you see that?" But the time, the struggles, allow us to become stronger. It's true for our bodies, and it's true for our faith. The journey is important. So there's no shortcuts for us as individuals, but nor for our church as well. Today, following this service, your interim minister search committee will meet for the first time with our conference minister. Their task will be to complete over the next month and a half their search for the interim pastor who will be with you upon my departure at the end of May. The interim process is a journey. It's a journey that's important to go through. And there's no shortcuts to it. So let me tell you the way this works. The interim search committee will come up with a candidate and recommend that candidate to your council. Your council will vote on that candidate. And that person will serve you from the time of my departure until your settled pastor is called. So how long is that journey? Well, it goes until it's done. That's how long. Because you see, searches happen not in chronos time, the time of a watch, the time you can measure in hours, days, and months. Rather, it happens in kairos time. Kairos time is God's time, the fullness of time, the time that is needed in order to find the one whom God is calling to you, to work with you. And that process, through the process, you'll find that the work that you will do will guide the search committee in its selection of your settled pastor when that person is ultimately called. So some of that work will happen to help you prepare a profile, which is a description of your church that will be used in the search process. And when you go through that interim process, your members will all add input to help to guide, to help you to find the values and the particular gifts that you will be looking for in your settled pastor. And when that's done, then your search committee is formed. And then you move on to begin working with candidates to find the one who is called here. But throughout the process, while your pastors change, your ministers do not. What do I mean? Well, the pastor, the one who's going to preach, the one who's going to be here in the community, they'll change. You'll have your interim and then you'll have your settled pastor. But what is not changing is the ministers, because you are the ministers. You're all the ministers. And boy, did we understand that in spades this week when you all stepped up on an emergency basis to be able to open our shelter because of the number of migrants who were overflowing the monastery and the need that we had to step up and take off some of that pressure. The things that happen because you are the ministers is that the community continues to thrive. There's so many around the country who are continuing to support you. I got a note this week from a church up in Vermont who said, we saw that you're opening your shelter again, so we're going to send you a box full of children's shoes. And guess what we needed in the bodega? Were children's shoes. There are others who have sent cash. There's others who have reached out in different ways to support this congregation and its ministry, because you are a strong and thriving congregation and you are doing God's good work. God's good work. So the missions all continue, all of them, not just the shelter, all of them. And your work continues and you will continue to thrive. But there are things that you can do during this time, and they're very important things in order to support the congregation and your journey forward. The first is to stay invested. Stay invested in your church. This isn't a stepping out and waiting time. This is a time when we engage in where God calls us as a community and as we continue to move forward. So continue your support. This is a strong church, a lighthouse church, and others notice and pay attention. But you can also tend to your own spiritual journey. You can listen to your own God as God calls you forward. So the most important thing that I think you can do is to be a community that is marinated in prayer. Marinated in prayer. Now, let me talk about marinate a little bit. And I know something about that. Some of you know that I recently changed my eating habits and I'm eating a whole food plant-based, basically a vegan diet. But and it's made huge health differences for me. But I always was not so. And when I was growing up in a parsonage in Warwick, Rhode Island, my dad serving a poor little congregation, five kids, small salary, we would not have a lot of stuff. I didn't even know we didn't have a lot of stuff because it was normal for me. This is what we were. We didn't have a lot of things, but one of the things that we did have is at least once a month on a Sunday, we had steak. Steak. Well, chuck steak. My mom would go to the butcher and have the pot roast cut in half, chuck roast, cut it in half so it would make thin steaks, and she would marinate them in her own special recipe of marinade. She would put them, that marinade, together on Saturday morning, and the steaks would sit in that marinade in the refrigerator. And every time the refrigerator opened, the aroma of that marinade would fill the whole house, and we'd already start salivating for Sunday's steak. That marinade took that piece of rubber and turned it into a supple and delicious dinner. An incredibly tasty steak. In fact, later on in life, when I was maybe high school age, I remember we finally had the funds to go out to dinner. And we went out to dinner and the menu came and I looked at it everywhere. And I said, "Mom, there's no steak on here. I don't see chuck steak anywhere on this menu." All they got is this thing they call filet mignon or something. Those steaks were supple and tasty because of what a marinade does. And when you are marinated in prayer, your souls become supple. And supple souls can stretch and expand to contain an image of God that is so much bigger than you, so much bigger than this entire community. I pray that for you. And I call you to that marination in prayer starting right now. You can start with your interim search committee. And then you can move on to your congregation and to your interim pastor and to your leaders, and to the ministries and mission that this congregation undertakes. Because all of you have supple souls when you are deeply marinated in prayer. No, there's no shortcuts, but it's a beautiful journey. And friends, this isn't a journey that you need to take. This is a journey you deserve to take because it will make all the difference. I pray it would be so. Amen.